We love to explain quantum physics and the mysteries of the universe, but the mysteries of finance, not so much. Intuit helps you demystify your finances through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Understanding standard deductions or interest rates can be very complicated and tricky, with big potential consequences. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey, Daniel, is it true that every electron is identical?
Well, they all do have the same mass and the same charge.
Like, exactly?
Yeah, we think so.
Isn't that weird? Wouldn't you expect them to be a little bit different, each one?
It's kind of exactly not weird. It means that no electrons are weird because they're all the same.
I don't know, man. That's a bit spooky. Like, if everyone in your neighborhood looked the same, wouldn't that be weird?
I mean, I live in Orange County, so that's kind of what most people in the neighborhood are going for.
Everyone's going for that scruffy physicist look.
More like plastic surgery face and beige housing.
Well, I didn't want to say anything, but yeah, I do feel like you need a facelift anyway. Or at least a physics lift. Hi, I'm Jorge, I'm a cartoonist and the author of Oliver's Great Big Universe.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist and a professor at UC Irvine, and I'm proud of being one of a kind.
But what kind is that, Daniel? That's the question that you, the pride might depend on.
Yeah, I define my kind, man. There's nobody else like me.
How do you know, though? Have you met everyone who's ever existed? What if there was a Daniel with your exact same DNA that, lived 200 years ago? Or could be living right now.
It's possible, but they wouldn't have the same experiences. I have actually met another Daniel Whiteson. He's an artist in the UK and quite accomplished.
Ooh, are you jealous?
Am I jealous of the artist's lifestyle? Ooh, so many directions to go with that.
What was that like? I don't think I've ever met a Jorge Cham yet, but I think one exists somewhere in Indonesia, maybe.
Isn't there another one who has the Twitter handle at Jorge Cham?
Somebody got that Twitter handle. I don't know if it is Jorge Cham or not, but I'm waiting for the blackmail email.
Yeah, well, at least a digital copy of you exists.
Or maybe I opened it years ago, but I forgot the password and the email I associated it with. So I don't know. Maybe I am my other me.
Yeah, maybe we're old enough that younger versions of us are like alien minds.
Ooh, wait, wouldn't that make you an alien?
I think we're all still struggling to know ourselves, right?
Well, we might all be aliens, right? Isn't there a theory that maybe life came to Earth from Mars?
There is a theory like that called panspermia, that life may have originated somewhere else in the universe and then transported microbially hidden inside asteroids. It's a possibility.
We're all immigrants, kind of. But anyways, welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we do our best to digest this alien universe, to explain all of the bizarre and amazing effects we see out there in terms of little mathematical stories that your mind and my mind and Jorge's mind can actually understand, that we can talk about and digest and explain to you.
That's right, because it is a pretty vast universe, and it's also pretty weird, full of unexplained phenomena, unanswered questions, and potentially other versions of you out there.
Raising all sorts of interesting philosophical questions like, what does it mean to have an identical copy? And when you step into a transporter on Star Trek, is it making a copy or actually transporting you?
And what if, like, there's another Jorge and another Daniel and they start a podcast? Can we sue them technically? Or maybe just retire and give him the feed.
Yeah, maybe it's time for the next generation, right?
The new Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe. Or Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, the next generation.
Exactly, yeah. One of us is Jean-Luc and the other one is Riker.
Wait. Your name comes first. Does that mean I'm number two?
I don't know. Make it so.
Can I just be Q? Like, if I had to pick a character from the next generation, I would pick Q.
Really? Not Data. Data might be the smartest one.
Smarter than Q, who can do anything in time and space?
Q has no rules, so it doesn't really count.
Exactly.
So you basically, you want to be God, you're saying?
I mean, who doesn't? Come on.
Q has so much responsibility. Every child who's dying of cancer, that's Q's fault.
Is it really?
If you had the power to save a child and you didn't, then yeah, I think you're kind of responsible.
Boy, that's a lot of guilt.
That's why I'd rather be Data.
You want to be Data or be Data?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually just want to harness Data's computing powers to solve mysteries of the universe.
Yeah, but that's a lot of makeup to put on every day, though.
That is pretty heavy.
Yeah. But anyways, welcome to our podcast. We also like to answer questions, not just talk about the answers that physicists have found. We also like to think about questions about the universe.
Because everybody's got questions. I've got questions. You've got questions. Everybody who looks up at the night sky and wonders how it all works, or stares down between their toes and wants to understand the tiniest particles, is yearning to understand how the world works. And that means asking questions. And on this podcast, we answer questions at the edge of knowledge, those posed by physicists and those posed by listeners. So if you have questions about the nature of the universe or some explanation you've heard somewhere that didn't quite make sense to you, write to us to questions@danielandjorge.com. We really do write back to all of our listeners.
Yeah, we're all curious about how the universe works, why we're in it, and how it's all put together. Although I'm not exactly curious about the particles in your toes or anyone's toes. Maybe we'll leave that part out of our questions.
Wow, limits to your curiosity. That's so disappointing.
Yeah. I think there should be limits to anyone's curiosity. But yeah, we like to answer questions here on the podcast, sometimes from listeners. And so thanks to everyone who sent their questions in.
Often I'll just write back, but sometimes we choose questions to answer on the podcast because we think lots of people will want to hear the answers.
And so today on the podcast, we'll be tackling... listener questions, number 49. Ooh, what are we going to do when we hit 50, Daniel? We're going to have a mid-podcast life crisis?
We're going to have a nice cake with 50 on it, and we're going to fall asleep before the end of the party.
And then burn your house down? What?
It's going to be virtual, of course.
But yeah, we're answering listener questions here today, and we have some awesome questions here from our listeners. There's one about black hole identity. There's one about neutrino and how many there are in the universe. And we also have a question about what it's like to surf a gravitational wave. And what happens when you wipe out? Like, where do you fall if it's a gravitational wave? But let's jump right in. Our first question comes from Matthew, who comes from Barrie, Ontario.
Hello, Daniel and Jorge. This is Matthew from Barrie, Ontario, up here in Canada. And like many of your listeners, I spend a bit of time thinking about black holes. While I understand that it is impossible for us to see what lurks beyond the event horizon, I was curious if there is consensus in the scientific community about all black holes being the same or if they could vary inside based on their density. For example, could a smaller black hole be not a black hole at all, but a dark star, while the supermassive black holes at the center of some galaxies be a more traditional black hole or a string theory fuzzball? Thank you very much for the wonderful show, and I look forward to hearing your response.
All right. I feel like this question kind of has an identity problem in itself.
It's so many questions, but also one.
But I think Matthew's basic question is about the identity of black holes. Like, are all black holes the same? Are they actually black holes? Could they be something else? Is it a case of mistaken identity, or do all black holes come with an ID tag?
Yeah, he's basically wondering what's going on inside black holes and if they all have to be the same on the inside and whether the things we've seen out there in the universe that look like black holes could actually be a bunch of different kinds of stuff that all mimic black holes. So it's a really cool question. It gets at the heart of what we think is going on inside black holes.
Like maybe what we call black holes are actually maybe a variety of different things.
Yeah, it's possible. And two black holes with the same mass, do they have to look the same on the inside?
Depending on how much mass is in it. Or like two things that look like black holes, are they actually black holes? Or do you think he's asking if they're the same, if there's any property that sets them apart?
Yeah, I think he's asking both of those questions. And I think we should start with that. Like, if you have two black holes that have the same mass, are they the same thing? Are they indistinguishable or are they different? And this is a big question in general relativity. It goes by the name of, do black holes have hair? Essentially, are there textural details? Are there tiny little properties that set two black holes apart? The way two like identical twins are always a little bit different. Are two black holes with the same mass, could they actually be a little bit different on the inside?
I feel there's two questions. One is like, are they the same? And can you tell if they're the same? Aren't those two separate questions?
Yeah, those are two separate questions. So as you can see with black holes, we have like a constantly multiplying stream of questions.
It's like a black hole of questions.
It's a bit of a rabbit hole.
It's a black rabbit hole. So which question are we tackling? Can you tell if two black holes are different or whether they're actually different inside?
Yeah, we can talk about all of it, but let's start with what's going on inside black holes, at least what we think is going on.
Okay, well, you sort of mentioned the no hair problem. And that one's more of a, like, can you tell if two black holes are different problem?
I think it also touches on whether the black holes inherently are different. Are there features to two black holes which tell them apart? Because in general relativity, the idea is that all you could know about a black hole are three different quantities: how much mass it has, whether it's spinning, and whether it has electrical charge. And to say that that's all you can know about a black hole means that that's what defines a black hole. So in general relativity, two black holes with the same mass, spin, and charge really are identical, according to that theory.
From the outside, right? I mean, it's basically saying that's all you can tell about what's inside a black hole.
It means those are the only properties of the object. So even on the inside, they would be identical. Again, according to general relativity, important caveat we can get to later.
But I guess how can they be exactly identical, or how can we know, or how can the theory know that it's identical? Because inside the black hole, maybe things are arranged differently.
We can't know currently because we can't see inside black holes, but that doesn't stop the theory from predicting what's there and describing what we think is happening. And according to general relativity, again, big caveat there we can get to in a minute, all these black holes, if they have the same mass, spin, and charge, really are identical. They have the same exact internal structure because they're defined just by those three numbers. So there's no wiggle room. There's no opportunity for a black hole made of bananas to be different from a black hole made of bowling balls or squirrels if they have the same mass, spin, and charge. That's, again, according to general relativity, which is predicting what's inside black holes, though it's not something we've seen.
I guess what I mean is like a black hole is like a sphere, right? Like to us, it has volume. And so what does general relativity predict is inside of that sphere? Just a singularity? Like everything just collapses instantly? Or what?
Well, a black hole that's had time to settle, everything will fall towards singularity. So if things are still dynamically falling into a black hole, its state is changing. But after a long time, when it settles, then it's just defined by these three numbers. And yeah, two black holes with the same mass will each have a singularity inside them with the same mass.
And nothing between the singularity and the event horizon. What does general relativity say is between the singularity, which is at the center, and the event horizon, which is the outer shell of the black hole.
So it depends a little bit on the mass, spin, and charge. These kinds of black holes have different internal structures. Like the simplest kind, one with just mass but no spin, no charge, this is the kind most people talk about and think about, is just a sphere. And in the inside, you have the singularity and there's nothing else. If it's charged or if it's spinning, then the structure in the inside is a little bit different. Like you don't actually have a singularity if it's spinning, you have a ringularity because you need an object that can spin and singularities can't. And you can have different kinds of horizons inside the black hole or even near the black hole on the outside if it's spinning and if it has charge.
Well, that's an interesting concept you just mentioned, which is like the settling of a black hole. Now, does that happen like instantly over billions of years, trillions? Does it ever happen? Like, doesn't time stop inside of a black hole?
Nothing happens instantly, right? Relativity describes how there's a maximum speed limit to the universe. And so you definitely can't have things instantly collapsing into a singularity. It always takes time. How much time it takes depends on who you are and where you are. Like if you're outside the black hole and you're watching things fall in, you'll actually not see them fall in because time slows down so much at the event horizon, you'll see them frozen at the event horizon. If you are riding that banana into the black hole, then you will see yourself past the event horizon and you'll fall in and you'll reach the singularity in a finite amount of time. So how long it takes depends on the observer. In general relativity, these things are very screwy.
But I guess maybe then the scenario I wonder that Matthew's thinking about, maybe like if I had two black holes, they have the same mass and energy and spin and charge and all that. They're identical. But then black hole A eats a banana and black hole B eats a bowling ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like to us, it takes some time for that banana to and bowling ball to make it to the center of the black hole. So are those two black holes different in the meantime?
In the meantime, they are, yeah. But if the bowling ball and the banana have the same mass, and like that's a tiny bowling ball or a huge banana, then eventually they do reach steady state, which is just described by the mass, spin, and charge.
But could we tell that one ate the banana and the other one ate the bowling ball? We couldn't, right?
Not after they've settled into the singularity, exactly. According to general relativity, that information is lost. Before, that information is still within the event horizon. We can't see it, but it does still exist within the black hole. After it's settled into the singularity, according to general relativity, that information is gone because the state is perfectly described by the mass, spin, and charge.
So then it's sort of possible for two black holes to be different, perhaps, but mm-hmm. for us to not be able to tell them apart.
Yeah, that is possible. And that's a transient state.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, black holes are eating all the time, right? So
black holes in the real world, yeah, are always eating. They're always surrounded by something. There's never a true vacuum. There's always a solar wind or particles everywhere. So yeah, absolutely, black holes are always eating in real life. In the sort of thought experiments we construct, you can imagine a black hole surrounded by actually nothing, and then you just drop a banana into it. But yeah, in the real universe, black holes are never surrounded by nothing.
But I think, as you were saying, this all depends on general relativity.
Yeah, exactly. This is a picture from classical physics that says that singularities can exist within black holes and that matter could be compressed into a tiny dot. That's totally incompatible with what we know about the nature of reality. That is quantum mechanical, that when things get really, really small, like the size of singularities, different rules take over and have to be accounted for, rules that general relativity ignores. So we don't think singularities actually do exist at the heart of any black holes in our universe. We think if black holes are even real, that there's some other kind of thing going on, something dictated by a different theory of physics, not general relativity, one that correctly incorporates the quantum nature of our universe, a theory we don't have today, so we can't say what we actually think is inside a black hole.
But I think maybe Matthew's question is like, let's say black holes, they're all a little bit different inside, depending on their density, like maybe some of them are super dense, but don't collapse into a singularity, or maybe some do, or maybe some are more like string theory fuzzballs. I wonder if they can be different in that way inside, but to us from the outside, they all look the same.
It's possible, and it depends on your flavor of quantum gravity. if what he's describing is true, there are no classical black holes in the universe. They're all some weird quantum version. And you're right, there could be a variety, right? There could be some fuzzballs and some dark stars and some white holes and some other kind of crazy stuff going on. And whether we could see the difference on the outside also depends on the details of the quantum gravity theory. In some scenarios, you can tell what's inside a black hole by studying the patterns of the Hawking radiation, which might be quantum entangled with the details of what's going on inside and leaking that information out. There are other quantum theories of black holes in which you still can't get that information out, even though it is inside the event horizon. So it depends on your flavor of quantum black hole. But it's possible that all these things do really exist in our universe.
It sounds like it sort of depends on what you define as a black hole, right? Like if you define it as what general relativity calls a black hole, then you get one answer. But if you just define it as something that has an event horizon that doesn't let you look inside, it is possible maybe to have different kinds of black holes.
Exactly. And remember, not all of these objects even have event horizons. When we talk about a black hole, we sort of imply an event horizon, but it's possible that some of the things out there in the universe that we call black holes don't actually have event horizons. We haven't verified the event horizon nature of those objects. They're just really, really small, really, really massive, and really, really space bendy in the way we expect black holes to be, but we haven't like zoomed up close and proven that they actually have event horizons. And some of these theories don't create objects with event horizons.
But some do, right? Like you could have a dark star that does have an event horizon, perhaps.
Yeah, some of them do. Mm-hmm. It depends on the flavor of quantum gravity.
All right, well, then the answer for Matthew is it depends, and we don't know.
That summarizes most of physics, yes. It depends.
Good luck IDing that black hole that's in your backyard.
What it means is that there's still so much to learn about the nature of these objects. And the answer to the question might not be it's this kind or it's that kind, but it's all the kinds. I love that possibility.
So it sort of maybe depends on what's actually going on, which we don't have a clear theory about.
And we might not ever know.
Ever?
It might be that the universe prevents us from ever seeing inside these black holes, or that the information in the Hawking radiation doesn't reveal what's inside them. It might be that we're not smart enough to figure out the universe. Who knows?
Boy, I wish you had left the question on a more positive note.
But it could be that we figure it all out.
And there you go.
In 10 generations, the latest Daniel and Jorge are explaining it all to you on their podcast.
All right. Yeah, that's good. That doesn't leave us in a black hole. All right, let's tackle some of our other questions. We have questions here about the number of neutrinos in the universe. And also about what it's like to bob up and down on a gravitational wave. So let's dig into those. But first, let's take a quick break.
You know that feeling after you've done a deep spring clean of your house when you realize, wow, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like how you feel when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless, while Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Wow, how have I been affording all this? So it's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Personally, I've used Mint Mobile and the calls are always so crisp and so clear. All of their plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So it's time to ditch your overpriced wireless and go with Mint Mobile's limited time deal for 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/universe. That's mintmobile.com/universe. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/universe. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Slower speeds above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities, but it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
All right, we're answering questions from listeners. And our next question comes from Sam from British Columbia.
Hello, Daniel and Jorge. This is Sam from British Columbia, and thank you for your podcasts and availability to answer our questions. It is really appreciated. In your podcasts about neutrinos, you always mention how many trillions are passing through the Earth every second. This got me wondering about how many neutrinos are estimated to exist in the universe, as well as proportions for the other main particle groups in the Standard Model. It is often estimated that there are 10 to the 80 particles in the universe. When I asked ChatGPT for help, I got back that each of the groups of leptons, quarks, and bosons each were in the order of 10 to the 80, and then that there were significantly more electrons than neutrinos, and also that there were about 10 to the 80 of each. I think ChatGPT once again was confused, and I'm hoping you can help unconfuse me. Thanks.
All right. Well, I'm glad that we were his second choice for answering questions about the universe.
Oh, man, ChatGPT.
I guess ChatGPT is free, I guess. You don't have to listen to ads, do you?
I think you have to pay for some version of ChatGPT, though no version of it can be relied on to answer physics questions.
I see. Well, you know what they say, you get what you pay for.
So. You do get what you pay for, exactly.
It sounds like ChatGPT did not answer Sam's question or gave him an answer that maybe it was confusing.
Well, it's also not designed to answer physics questions. It's designed to generate text which looks like the answers to questions. It's not designed to do any reasoning or have a model of the universe or actually think in any way or be accurate or explain things. So I wouldn't rely on ChatGPT to answer any questions.
Yet.
You could say that about anything, man. Your toaster hasn't replaced you yet.
Well, you know, it's like they say ChatGPT is not designed to do basic math, right? Like if you ask it a math question, it may not give you the right answer. But I've seen examples of like asking ChatGPT to check using some sort of math toolbox and then it gives you the right answer.
Yeah. You know, a stop clock is right a few times a day, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you could ask ChatGPT twice a day to go read every physics paper in the universe and then come back to you with an answer, which is basically what we do in this podcast. Right?
But it's the wrong tool for the job. You know, its job is to generate text which resembles answers, not to reason and think and provide explanations. I don't think it'll ever be a good place to ask physics questions.
I see.
Someday somebody might actually develop an AI which is good at the reasoning and thinking and explaining. I'm not ruling that out. I'm pretty sure that will happen one day, but large language models won't get there.
I think what you're saying is that we're the right tools.
Yes, ask us.
we're just a pair of tools.
Just like Data on Star Trek, right?
There you go. maybe the next ChatGPT should be called Daniel and Jorge.
Chat DJ.
All right, well, let's get to Sam's question here. Sam wants to know how many neutrinos there are in the universe, right? Like, what's a good estimate for the number of neutrinos in the universe?
Such an awesome question, because there are so many neutrinos in the universe. It's mind-boggling.
Well, there's a lot of everything in the universe, right?
Well, there's only one me and one you.
How do you know?
Ship of Theseus, man. If there's another copy of me, it's not me.
Well, there could be one a you that has gone through the same experiences as you. Mm. Wouldn't that be the same? Anyways, let's get back on track here. It's a big universe. Sam wants to know how many neutrinos there are. Why do you think he wants to know how many there are? Like, why neutrinos? Why not how many electrons or quarks there are in the universe?
I think because neutrinos give us a window into a deeper understanding of what's out there in the universe. Like, we're made out of quarks and electrons, and that feels like, oh, that's the universe. What's all that made out of? But as soon as you realize that our senses are limited and that there's so much more going on in the universe than the little bits of matter that you and I are made out of, it makes you wonder what's out there and how much of it is there. And neutrinos are like the tip of that invisible matter iceberg.
I see. Well, how would you answer the question of how many neutrinos there are?
Yeah, so it takes a few steps. Basically, you have to know how many protons there are in the universe, and then you have to try to figure out how many neutrinos there are per proton. And it turns out that we can do both of those calculations.
Wait, why do we have to go through protons?
Because the way we figure out how many neutrinos there are in the universe is by going back to the very, very early universe and understanding how photons and protons and neutrinos and dark matter all sloshed around and pushed against each other. It's this plasma soup at the very beginning of the universe that reveals the answers to all of these questions. From measurements of the cosmic microwave background, we can learn a lot about that plasma and how it was sloshing, and it tells us the answers to all of these things. In specific ways, it tells us some ratios that allow us to get to these answers.
Like the beginning of the universe tells you the original recipe of the universe, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And some of that hasn't changed, and some of that has changed, and we know how that has changed, and we can evolve that through time. But it basically starts the machine and tells us how things evolve through time.
But is it even possible to get this answer? Because aren't neutrinos being created, for example, all the time in the sun? Like, are new neutrinos being made all the time?
Yeah, the specific number, like to the individual neutrino, is not very well defined, because neutrinos are quantum particles, and so they even have probabilities of existing. Like, you have a certain reaction that might generate neutrinos. Whether it actually did or not isn't even determined until it interacts with some classical object. So from a quantum mechanical point of view, getting the answer down to like the individual neutrino is not technically possible. And even zooming out a little bit, as you say, there are neutrino factories in the universe, and neutrinos being annihilated. Neutrinos can be created and destroyed. So the number is changing. But it turns out that the number of neutrinos being created and destroyed in the universe is really tiny compared to like the huge reservoir of neutrinos we already have.
Wait, how do you know?
Because we think we understand those processes, and we've measured neutrinos that come from space and neutrinos that pass through the Earth. Neutrino physics is something we really started to get a grip on in like the last 20 years. So we have a pretty good handle on how many neutrinos are out there and how many are being made by the sun. We even see neutrinos generated by crazy sources in other galaxies. Neutrino astronomy is something that's really come into its own the last couple of decades.
And so what's the picture? It's like, the sun is making bazillions of neutrinos, but that's very like a drip of water compared to like we're swimming in an ocean of neutrinos. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. It's like asking, what's the volume of the Pacific? Well, you don't really have to worry about evaporation and rain, because those are tiny details relative to the massive volume of water there.
And so then what's the connection to protons? Why do we need to know how many protons there are?
Because we only know how many neutrinos there are per proton. That's a measurement we can make back in the very early universe. If you wind the universe backwards, we see that it gets hotter and denser. Right now, the universe is kind of old and cold, very dilute, very chill. But as you wind time backwards and you undo the expansion, things get very hot and very dense, back to some early state where there were protons and there were photons and there were electrons and there were also neutrinos zipping about. And we can see photons from that moment. This is the moment we call the surface of last scattering, when the universe became transparent to those photons, so they're still around. So we can like see a picture of what that early universe plasma looked like. It's called the cosmic microwave background radiation. And we can see patterns in it. We see wiggles and we see waves. And those wiggles and waves are determined by how it's sloshing, which depends on like how many protons there are, how many photons there are, how much dark matter there is. As you change those fractions, that early universe plasma sloshes differently because those different pieces all behave differently.
But even neutrinos were consequential at the beginning of the universe? Because I thought neutrinos were basically massless and they're ghostly and they don't really interact with anything much. Isn't there like a wide range of neutrino proportions that could have been there at the beginning of the universe?
Yeah, absolutely. Neutrinos don't interact very much, but they do have energy. And so they affect the energy density of the universe, which changes its expansion. And because neutrinos are very, very light, they sort of fall into the same category as photons. Back in the early universe, everything that was moving almost at the speed of light or at the speed of light gets counted kind of as radiation. Remember, we talked about this once. And stuff that's moving very, very slowly gets counted as matter. And so things that are moving as radiation do affect the expansion of the universe because they affect the energy density in this complicated way. So you're right, the neutrinos are weak, but they still have energy, and that affects the overall balancing of these equations in general relativity.
There's still a piece of the pie.
Yeah, exactly. And it turns out there's a huge number of them, so they have a pretty big influence.
Oh, how big of a number? Like if you had a pie chart of the universe at the beginning in the Big Bang, how big is the neutrino slice?
Yeah, so you wouldn't even be able to see the protons on that pie chart because there are approximately 1 billion neutrinos for every proton.
Well, in terms of quantity, but in energy, how big of a slice is it?
There, the numbers are much more closely balanced. There are many fewer protons, but protons have a huge mass compared to neutrinos that have almost no mass. On the other hand, the neutrinos have a lot more kinetic energy, right? They're moving really, really fast. They're almost at the speed of light. So the energies there are much better balanced. They're in the same order of magnitude. The numbers aren't exactly determined. But the original question was about the number of neutrinos in the universe. And so there we need the number ratio. And the cosmic microwave background radiation tells us that there are like 330 million neutrinos per cubic meter of space back then. And there was less than one proton per cubic meter. So the ratio is about a billion.
I see. So neutrinos were a pretty significant slice of the universe, but in terms of quantity, like number of neutrinos, because they're so small and light, the number of them dwarfs the number of protons around us.
Exactly. So there's this incredible ocean of neutrinos back in the early universe and still today. Like the density of neutrinos has dropped because the universe expands and everything gets more dilute except for dark energy. But most of those neutrinos are still around. It's called the cosmic neutrino background. And it's something we're searching for in neutrino experiments.
Does it depend still on the number of protons? Is it the same ratio, like 330 million to one or a billion to one?
It depends a little bit what you count as a proton. Like some of those protons go on to make helium. There's still protons in there, but like now we call them helium instead of protons or hydrogen. But most of those protons are still around and most of those neutrinos are still around. And because they're both matter, they both get diluted in the same way as the universe expands. And so their ratio is approximately the same.
Then to get a count of the number of neutrinos, we need a count of the number of protons. So how many protons are there in the universe?
So in the observable universe, we don't know what's in the full universe, right? Past where we can see. We know the density of protons, which is about a fifth per cubic meter. And we know roughly the volume of the observable universe, which is like 10 to the 80 cubic meters or so. And that means around 10 to the 79 protons in the observable universe. That's 10 with 79 zeros. There's not even like a name for that number.
Sure there is. We can make one up.
All right. There will be soon. What's the name of that number?
Bananian.
Coincidentally, there's exactly one bananian of protons in the universe.
Oh my gosh. Such a coincidence.
Which means that there's a billion bananians of neutrinos in the universe because there's about a billion neutrinos per proton.
So 10 to the what, 88?
About 10 to the 88 neutrinos in the observable universe.
Observable universe. But the observable universe is getting bigger every day, right? So that number is going up.
Actually, it depends a little bit how you think about distance. The universe is expanding faster than the speed of light. So the fraction of stuff in the universe we can see is actually shrinking, right? And eventually a lot of stuff is going to fall outside of our horizon. So the number of particles in the observable universe is actually decreasing.
Whoa. The universe is, it's outgrowing how far we can see.
Yeah, exactly. The universe is expanding faster than our horizon is. So particles are disappearing from the observable universe. That's another reason why the number is not fixed.
Well, it may not even be fixed, right? Like maybe the universe is infinite, in which case there's maybe an infinite number of neutrinos.
Yeah, exactly. In that case, you could still measure the density of neutrinos, like 330 million per cubic meter, but the total number in the whole universe would be infinite if the universe is infinite, and if the universe beyond our horizon is similar to the bits that we see here. Could be that what's beyond the horizon is very different, right? And that we live in a weird patch of the universe.
Right, right. It depends, and we don't know, is what you're saying. but what do you think is the ratio of, like in the universe, the ratio between neutrinos and Daniels? Is it infinite to one, or is there a fixed number?
That's a question philosophers have been wondering about for thousands of years, and we're not going to answer it today on the podcast.
That's right. We don't have the time. That's why we're not answering.
That's right. Exactly. No, I think if there are other Daniels out there, they're still not me because I'm not experiencing them. Even if they think that they're Daniel, I'm experiencing this one, which makes this one different, which makes me unique. I'm only experiencing one Daniel.
Unless they're having the exact same experience as you are, in which case...
In which case, they're
unique
also.
Someone from the outside can't tell the difference.
But we can from inside, right? Inside the Daniel horizon, you can tell which Daniel you are.
But your feeling of uniqueness is the same feeling of uniqueness the other Daniels having.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm only feeling my feeling of uniqueness. I'm not feeling theirs.
Oh, I see. So to you, there's only one Daniel.
Yeah.
But maybe to someone outside of the universe, there is an infinite number of Daniels.
Yeah.
And it all depends, and we don't know.
And to me is all that matters because I'm the only consciousness I'm actually aware of in the universe.
But I'm not asking what matters to you. I'm wondering what matters to me, Daniel.
I don't know if you're even real, so.
That's right. We're all in some AI's imagination. All right, well, I think that answers the question for Sam. The estimate of number of neutrinos in the observable universe is 10 to the 88 neutrinos. Plus or minus 10 to the, what,
87?
87.
Plus or minus infinity, probably.
Those are plus or minus infinity. All right, well, let's get to our last question of the episode, which is about gravitational waves. And can you surf one? So let's get into that. But first, let's take another quick break.
The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities, but it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope.
To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, our last question of the day comes from Calais, who wants to know about gravitational waves.
Howdy, Daniel and Jorge. I was wondering how it would feel to be hit by a gravitational wave. We have detected infinitely weak waves from Earth, but imagine if we were close to two black holes revolving around each other and eventually colliding and merging. How would it feel to get hit by a gravitational wave? And would it be the same as a wave? And finally, would your organs be damaged?
Interesting question. It sounds like Clay is planning a trip, perhaps.
I think Clay wants to experience the universe, wants to feel gravitational waves, not just read about it online.
Well, I think one of the things is that, first of all, we're all experiencing gravitational waves right now, right?
Yeah, that's true. Gravitational waves are everywhere. They fill the universe because they're generated anytime any mass is accelerated. So you're in orbit, you're generating gravitational waves. You get out of bed, you're generating gravitational waves. Gravitational waves are everywhere.
Right. We're experiencing them. We're generating them. Like if a car accelerates in front of me, I'm technically going to feel or I'm going to experience the gravitational wave generated by that car, right?
Mm-hmm. It's very hard to feel these things because they're very, very gentle. Remember that gravity is like the dominant force in the structure of the universe, but it's also the weakest force, if you even call it a force, so much weaker than the forces that hold your body together, for example.
Right. They're super mellow, hard to detect, but we can detect some of the ones that come from deep in outer space, that come from black holes or heavy things circling each other and then colliding.
Exactly. The way to detect gravitational waves is to look for extremely loud sources of them, things that make very dramatic gravitational waves. And so two black holes, which are two enormous masses orbiting each other very, very quickly just before they collide, are very loud sources of gravitational waves. So even though we're very far from them, we can be like a billion light years away, we can still detect those gravitational waves here on Earth with super sensitive detectors.
Right. Here on Earth, by the time that they get to us, they're super weak because I guess like a ripple in a lake, gravitational waves get weaker as they expand, right, from their source.
Yeah. As you get further from the source, they get weaker and weaker.
Right. And as you said, the ones we're detecting now with LIGO, which is the big physics instrument we have here on Earth, those happen billions of light years away. And I think the Kalia's question is, like, what if you were closer to that source of gravitational waves? Like, what if you were right next to those two black holes colliding? What would it feel like to have this giant gravitational wave pass through you?
Yeah, it's a really cool question. To think about it, I think we should, like, zoom in on what happens first to, like, individual particles in your body and then think about what that would feel like. So instead
of the scenario is, how close am I to these gravitational waves?
So imagine we're just like a few tens of thousands of kilometers away from these two black holes that are orbiting each other.
Aren't black holes usually bigger than a few tens of thousands of kilometers? Or are you imagining like two small ones?
Well, the kind of collisions we've seen are between black holes that have like 30 to 50 solar masses. And those have an event horizon radius of like 100 kilometers or less. So if you're 30,000 kilometers away, you're definitely not inside the event horizon.
Okay, so these are pretty small black holes.
Yeah, but these are the kind of black holes we've been able to see collide.
Oh, all right. So then we're a few tens of thousands of kilometers away from these two black holes smashing into each other.
Exactly. And on a human, if you're like 30, 50,000 kilometers away from two black holes that have like the mass of 30 or 50 times the sun, then you're going to feel what's called a strain of about 1 millimeter. The strain is how much your body is getting squeezed by the gravitational wave. And this is what we measure also here on Earth with LIGO. We have these interferometers, these very long laser legs that get squeezed and lengthened as the gravitational wave passes by. The ones here on Earth are so faint that they measure strains of like 1 × 10⁻², which means that like the 2 mile leg of the interferometer gets shorter by that factor. It's a really, really tiny factor. But if we're close enough.
And that's
enough,
how much like space is being stretched or compressed, right? Like not necessarily something in space, right? Because it's something in space is sort of holding on to itself, but you're talking about the stretching of space itself.
Yeah, the changing of the distance between two particles, for example. So imagine you have two particles and you're a few tens of thousands of kilometers away from these black holes that are merging and they're generating gravitational waves. What's going to happen is they're going to change the distance between the two atoms, right? So for example, if the distance gets longer than those two atoms, if they were like bound together somehow, then they're going to feel an attractive force to pull them back to where they were in equilibrium. If the gravitational wave is very slow, they're going to be able to basically stay in equilibrium and nothing really happens. But if the gravitational frequency is high, if the sort of squeezing and pulling and pushing is fast, they'll effectively feel a force and they might start to oscillate back and forth. That's kind of what happens in LIGO.
So like the stretching of space is kind of like how much space wants to stretch you.
Yeah, the distance between those two particles or the two mirrors in LIGO gets longer or shorter based on the gravitational wave. But then the interaction between the two particles or the structural strength of the thing, whatever, has a natural length that it wants to be at. So it'll try to return to that natural length. Like if you imagine a spring between these two particles, you pull them apart. Well, the spring is going to pull them back together.
Right. So then you're saying like if I'm a few tens of thousands of kilometers from these black holes and I would feel about a 1 millimeter stretch in my body, or space would want to stretch my body about 1 millimeter.
Mm-hmm. And based on the frequency, you're going to get shaken by 1 millimeter. It's not like you just get pulled by 1 millimeter in one direction and then you stay there. A gravitational wave is a wave. It's oscillating. And depending on the frequency, if it's like a fast wave or a slow wave, it's going to shake you at that speed. So it might like pull you in one direction and then squeeze you in that direction and pull you in the other direction. So there's this pulling, the stretching and the squeezing. So right now we're talking about the amplitude of about 1 millimeter, but the frequency of that is also important. And that depends on the orbits of these black holes. How many times are they passing around each other? That determines the frequency of this gravitational wave. Mm. If you're nearby these black holes, you're basically going to get shaken from the inside.
Right. And you're saying kind of depending on the frequency, it might be dangerous or not. Like if it was shaking really slowly, your body can probably adjust to that shaking. Mm-hmm. But if it's shaking super fast, then it might scramble your insides.
It might scramble your insides. You might also experience it in a weird way. Like it might be like being at a concert. Sound waves at a concert also shake your body and you experience them as sound. If you're out in space near two black holes, you might literally hear the gravitational waves because like the drums in your ear will get shaken.
Whoa, as would everything else in your body.
As would everything else, just like at a concert, right? When you're in the mosh pit at that concert, your toes are getting shaken, even though your ears are the only ones actually transmitting sound to your brain. The same way a gravitational wave can be squeezing and pulling on your whole body, but your ears might be the only ones picking it up.
I've never been in a mosh pit, but I'll take your word for it. So you might feel it, but is it dangerous? Like if it's high frequency enough, and these things are pretty high frequency. By the time they smash together, it's like bzzz, it's super high frequency, right?
Yeah, they can get to be very high frequency. And actually the frequency they experience is even higher than we observe because there's gravitational time dilation. These black holes, of course, have super high curvature. And now one black hole is near another one. It's experiencing the gravitational time dilation of that black hole. So time is super slowed down. So what we're observing is the slowed down gravitational wave being emitted by these event horizons. That's already taken into account. If it wasn't, then the frequency would be much, much higher.
Well, I guess from what we know of these smashing black holes or the ones we've seen and the frequency we've seen and how fast they're actually are closer to the source, would they actually kill you at this distance? Like at some point, they'll start to rip apart the bonds between the proteins in your body, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it'll basically scramble your brain.
I don't think I can say it depends a lot on the internal biological friction, like how much energy is actually going to get absorbed and how squishy your body is, how resilient it is. Depends a lot on the exact kind of tissue. I think all I can do is treat your body as a sphere with ears and say, you'll probably hear it happening.
But you can probably make that calculation, right? Like you can calculate the spaghettification point of a black hole, right? Like the point at which it would actually tear you apart falling into a black hole. You can probably do that for gravitational wave, right?
Yeah, but the energy that gets absorbed depends on this internal friction. Like if there's no internal friction to your object, it can get squeezed and squished and then be totally unharmed. So how much energy is deposited, how much damage is done, depends entirely on the internal friction of that object. It's not just dependent on the tidal forces.
Right, right. But I imagine, I mean, we don't have to do it now or there's no pressure for you to come up with an answer. But like if you could make the calculation for like a typical brain, what are some of the maximum accelerations a brain can withstand before it turns into, you know, mush? And you can maybe backtrack to find what kind of frequency would of gravitational waves would kill you.
Yeah, probably somebody who knows something about the brain could figure that out.
What do we know about brains? We just use them.
I'm going to guess the answer is it depends and we don't know.
Exactly. you read my brain. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Exactly. I just got a gravitational wave idea into my brain.
But I feel like this is just from standing tens of thousands of kilometers away. You're saying maybe we might survive this? I don't know. Because don't these things go pretty high frequency? Even a 1 millimeter strain might be enough to smush your brain.
1 millimeter strain is pretty big. So I think it might be enough. I mean, I think 1 millimeter strain is much more than you ever experience at a concert. Even very, very high intensity sound waves don't actually like move the molecules in your body by a millimeter. That's a pretty huge displacement. And you've got lots of really sensitive things inside your body that are much smaller than 1 millimeter. So 1 millimeter squeezing and stretching could totally destroy like really sensitive little biomachineries.
So it'd be so like being in a smosh pit, not a mosh pit. Like your brain would get smoshed.
Yeah, I think it might be like being in a blender.
Great. Then I imagine if you get closer to these circling black holes, and it just gets more dangerous, right? Because yeah, then waves could get much more intense.
Exactly. The amplitude of the waves just grows as you get closer. The strain gets larger and larger.
What if you're just 1,000 kilometers away? How big would the strain be?
Well, it goes like 1/r, which is a little bit weird. And so
1,000 millimeters?
30 times closer would be 30 times. If you're like 30 or 50 times closer. If you're 10 times closer, it's going to be 10 times as strong.
Times 10 to the 3? No? I mean, cube. Because your R went down a tenth. So then doesn't the intensity go up by a cube?
The strain goes like 1/r.
Oh, linear? You sure?
Yeah, it's inverse linear, yeah.
Oh, it's linear. All right. So then you would experience it a 1 centimeter strain.
Yeah, 10 times closer, you get 1 centimeter strain.
Boy. Yeah, that would be a lot.
That would definitely be a lot. Kali's asking, how would it feel to get hit by a gravitational wave? Would your organs be damaged? It depends a lot on the distance. You get close enough, it could definitely scramble you. You get not too close, then you could probably hear it, like physically hear it without being destroyed. But I don't know exactly where that line is, and I don't recommend you figure it out.
That's right. Keep it a thought experiment. Keep it a brain experiment to save your brain. All right. Well, I think that answers all of our questions. Some pretty interesting ideas here. Overall, the picture is that the universe is still mysterious. There's a lot we don't know. And there's still a lot of questions we can ask about it for us to explore.
But we love that you ask these questions and we love trying our best to answer them. We don't always know the answer. That's sort of the game of physics. Figuring out where the edge of knowledge is and trying to push it forward a tiny little bit.
At least that's one of the games one Daniel can play.
What can we figure out if we have even more Daniels?
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
For more science and curiosity, come find us on social media where we answer questions and post videos. We're on Twitter, Discord, Insta, and now TikTok. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.